Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Negotiation. I'm your host, Todd Embley. And on today's show, I welcome back, once again, Olivia Plotnick, founder of Y Social and one of the most insightful voices on Chinese consumer culture and digital marketing. Olivia recently embarked on a remarkable journey across 32 cities in China over 60 days, immersing herself in the country's diverse regional cultures and uncovering how people live, shop, and connect with brands today. From tier one cities like Shanghai and Beijing to emerging urban centers, Olivia shares her firsthand observations of the evolving Chinese consumer landscape, revealing both common threads and striking regional contrasts. The conversation explores the resurgence of offline retail, the growing influence of local brands, and what international businesses can learn from how China's next generation of consumers engage with products, experiences, and storytelling. Olivia also reflects on her favorite moments from the road and offers advice for brands and travelers alike seeking to better understand modern China. Enjoy.
You know, in 2018, 2019, when we had all those projections coming out about how Chinese consumers were going to drive global luxury growth, you know, by 2025, even by 2035, that they were going to be, you know, this certain percentage of an entire luxury spending. That has all tapered down a bit. But at that time, I think we were able to safely say, like, luxury in China is doing really well. Now it's more like specific brands are doing well. So it's not across the entire category.
Home to over 4 billion people, the Asia-Pacific region boasts one of the most powerful consumer markets on the planet. Not only is it home to half of the world's under 30 population, but it's also home to more than half the world's internet users. It's a market that no globally minded organization should ignore. But entering markets like China, Japan, or Southeast Asia is no easy task. Just ask the likes of Microsoft, Google, Uber, and Facebook. However, times are changing, and with the right partners, doors are slowly opening as more and more companies find success growing their key markets in APAC. I myself spent 8 years in China, mostly as a venture capitalist, helping early-stage tech companies grow in the Asia-Pacific market successfully. This show is dedicated to uncovering and examining successful Asia market entry and growth strategies by interviewing the experts who've done it before and truly understand what it takes to be successful in the region. My name is Todd Embley, and welcome to The Negotiation. Negotiation brought to you by WPIC Marketing and Technologies. Olivia, welcome back to The Negotiation.
Thank you so much. It's great to be back. Number four.
You have broken the record. You've broken the record. I think we've had, three or four guests that have done three. You, of course, are one of them. But now you sit atop the list now as a guest of for your fourth time. That's amazing.
Amazing. Well, you know, like we said, I'm waiting for my plaque.
Yeah, no. I think we'll talk to the powers that be, but I believe Fifth time is a trip around the world.
Great.
Or is that winning the amazing race? I can't remember. But I want to talk a lot about your amazing race. But first, where are you in the world today that we are recording you from?
I am in Shanghai, and it is, you know, it's been a really uncharacteristic fall this year. It has felt like July up until today, really. It's mid-October right now. Today it's raining and it's slightly cooler, but it has been the most bizarre fall that I've ever experienced so far.
Interesting. You know, so over here where I am in Western Canada, it was by far and away the coldest day that we've had. You know, gorgeous blue sky, but it was cold. And I remember when I had my cup of coffee living down in San Francisco after I left China, the Indian summers, where September and October were amazing, but August, you know, July and August would be oddly cool and damp. Of course, you're in the Bay. And then to hear that about Shanghai, where I did spend 3 years of my life, that is odd. Who knows? Maybe there's something going on out there. But it looks like winter, you can say officially now, is on the horizon. You know,
wow.
It's announced, I think, that it's coming. I'm so sorry for all of you listening. And we are, you know, recording this kind of midway through October. So now, as I said, your amazing race. You recently traveled to 32 cities across China in 60 days. How did this bonkers idea come about?
So I've been living in China for the past 10 years, as you know, and you know, I spend most of that time in Shanghai, or I go to Beijing sometimes, Shenzhen, or do, you know, smaller trips like this. And I haven't done extensive travel outside of, I would say, major cities. And this year, at the beginning of the year, I read several works. I read a book by Emily Fang, Let Only Red Flowers Bloom. And then that inspired me actually to read another book, which had inspired her writing, by Philip Pan, Out of Mao's Shadow. And these two books take different time periods. They're both written by journalists who have compiled years and years of their experience into these books of interviewing and talking to different people. But they create this tapestry of China through telling people's stories. So this really got me thinking about, you know, how do we think about China today? How do I stay informed about China? And that's a lot through reading reports and looking at data, and not so much through stories and actual on the ground. So I had all of this kind of floating around in my head. And I had also taken a trip up to Harbin in the very north of China, as well to Jingdezhen, which is about 2 hours outside of Shanghai. And so all of this kind of culminated in the spring of thinking about how could I understand better this moment of where China is at, because there's a lot of questions. You know, is China's economy doing well? Is it doing poorly? Is consumer confidence rising? What types of brands should be entering? There's a lot of unanswered questions about China right now. And, you know, I was thinking about how do I best answer that? And the idea honestly came quite suddenly to me. I thought, okay, I can do this trip. I could probably devote about 2 months to doing this. What's the maximum amount of cities I could go to? Reasonably. Maybe other people have a different definition of reasonable. But I thought I could pack in at least 30 cities, which is, you know, about 1 to 2 cities every other day. And then I just decided to do it. And I didn't put much more thought into it until a few weeks before actually embarking on the trip. I think if I would have thought about it more, I definitely wouldn't have done it. But sometimes you just have to dive off of the deep end. So I planned out this trip over 30 cities. Originally, I had about 38 cities on the list. I ended up going to 32 cities, and I had planned the route right before I left. I wanted to hit almost every single province. So I wanted to have as many different touch points as I could around the entire country. And, you know, we can kind of pick apart arguments for and against this method, because I understand that it's, you know, it's not perfect by any means. This was not like scientifically set out formula, but I wanted to have as many different touch points to kind of get this real time snapshot of what was happening across the country. And so I started from Shanghai, went down into the south, and then I kind of went all the way to the west, and then up north, and then coming back down into the center, and then back into Shanghai. I did most of it by train. So it took 25 trains and only 6 flights, which was pretty good. And a few buses here and there. But I think another, you know, important point to mention is that I had lived about 10 years ago in Kunshan, which is just outside of Shanghai. And during that time that I was living there for about a year, I would go to other, you know, third and fourth tier cities. So I had a reference point in my mind of what third and fourth tier cities felt like and looked like about 10 years ago. And so for this trip, I focused mainly on second, third, and fourth tier cities for the majority of the cities that I stopped in, because I wanted to understand and really have this better idea of what are these lower tier cities, what is growth looking like? A lot of consumer spending is rising in these lower tier cities compared to somewhere like Shanghai or Beijing, where it's kind of getting more stagnant. So, you know, what are these consumers spending on? What do the malls look like? And for the trip, I kind of tried my best to have a methodology in each city that I could replicate going from city to city. So I was looking at trends in retail, beauty, health and fitness, youth culture, and tourism. And so for each city, I would try to go to one of the malls. Now there's a lot of mix-C malls in third and second tier cities. So I would go to one of those. If they didn't have one, I would go to, you know, another one of their newer malls. Next, I would try to join a run club or go to the park in the morning to kind of see what people, you know, what was the activity level? Are people out, you know, running or jogging, or what are they doing in the parks in the morning? And then the third metric I would have is going to different local coffee shops. And that's not necessarily because I'm, you know, an avid coffee connoisseur, but I thought this was really interesting because of a few reasons and a few things that it illuminates about how the economy and consumer spending, you can look at it in the way of its new services building, new services businesses coming up. So the government wants to promote development of the services economy in China. It's much more healthy to have your economy depend on services businesses than it is consumption. It's also interesting to look at a lot of these coffee shops are started by young people who are moving out of the bigger cities back into their hometowns, starting coffee shops. So kind of a reverse migration of what has been happening. Quite interesting as well how it fits into local domestic tourism, as people, you know, go explore lower tier cities. They, you know, often post about going to different coffee shops on social media platforms like Xiaohongshu or Dianping, something like this. So really exploring the development and impact of that. There were quite a few other things that I was tracking as well. I had started out tracking, I wanted to also track the prevalence of EVs in each city, because in, you know, I'm sure many guests on here have spoken about how popular EV cars are in big cities like Shanghai. And so I was very curious what that looks like around the rest of the country. And I had a little rubric where I was tracking, like, you know, does it seem low, medium, or high? And about 10 cities in, I just gave up tracking because EVs were so ubiquitous in every single city, even down to third and fourth tier and even fifth tier cities, that it just didn't even make sense to gauge the level anymore. So there were things along the way that I was like, wow, this has completely, you know, changed my perception, or this was something I wasn't expecting. But yeah, that was kind of a huge chunk of information, and I'm excited to hear your thoughts on what is interesting to dive deeper into.
I think it's, I like what you said about, you know, you're doing a study, you're going to run some experiments, but you kind of had to take your lab with you, which means in a laboratory, you can control everything. So that really the only data, the outcomes, the differences that you're measuring are coming very clean and clear, because everything else is controlled. So you were aware of that and you kind of took that, and it was a good thing that you had kind of a good idea of what you were looking for and wanted to measure and potentially look out for. Very difficult thing to do. The other thing I wanted to mention is don't you dare feel bad or have to explain to anybody not going to enough cities or not doing it the right way or doing the right kind of transportation. Ignore the haters. I'd like to see anybody else try this. Okay. So forget about that. I got the impression, and when I went to business school, very famously in economics, there's kind of the Big Mac price parity principle, where what is the price of a Big Mac around the world? Knowing that McDonald's was probably at the time one of the biggest fast food chains, they were in the most countries as a standardized product company. around the world. And so what was the price of a Big Mac in every country? And how did that, through an exchange rate conversion, measure? And then they would use that to determine what was kind of like a, you know, purchase parity in every different kind of country around the world, something like that. And so the coffee shop, you know, is a perfect example of just like, what does a grande latte or similar cost at these, you know, types of places as well. So love all that. I guess where I want to start is asking you just for some high level, without getting into the deeper details, but you're just your high level takeaway from the journey in general. And what stood out to you most about Chinese consumer trends and culture, almost in aggregate?
One thing that we can talk about is sports and fitness. And this is not something that's new, right? You've had a ton of guests on talk about this from all different angles. And, you know, we can see from the numbers, Lululemon and Hoka and Salomon, all these brands are doing pretty well and even carrying the, you know, their global line by their performance in China, and people's involvement in different sports activities. What I thought was maybe the story not told so much, or something that is not understood as much, is just how much this sports and fitness and healthy active lifestyle is becoming people's entire identity and their entire life. Like, it's not just it's not an activity that you do after work or before work, of like going to for a jog or going for a run. It's really forming people's entire lifestyle and their entire identity around themselves and their friend group and what they aspire to. So for example, I met some young people in Wenzhou and Guangzhou who were part of multiple different run clubs. And then on the weekend, they would go climbing, and they would, you know, hang out with their friend groups from these different fitness groups. And they even went so far as to say, like, why at this point in my life, I'm not interested in settling down and having a partner and having kids, because I'm so fulfilled by all these different activities and hobbies that I do. And that would just interfere with my schedule. And, you know, they're willing to spend money on some Salomon shoes, but not have a, you know, super fancy car or something like this. So, you know, we do know that more people are becoming active, but I don't think that brands really understand just how deep that layer goes. I'll give you another example of people who are getting really into running and running marathons and doing basically touring the country to run different marathons. So I met up with this was a very unintentional, but I was going running one morning in Datong, and I came across this group of about 10, 15 really stellar runners who were all in their 50s and 60s. Like, these guys were super fit, training really hard. And so we struck up a conversation, we started running together, and they were telling me that they run, you know, almost a marathon or two a month, and they go and travel with their friends. So they'll go to a different city in China, spend 2 or 3 days there, hang out, you know, bring their wife or their family, hang out with their friends, meet friends from their other, you know, that they've met at other marathons. And, you know, just have a good time, run the race, see some sights, come back home, and then do it again. So there's just, that just opens up so many more layers of consumption activity and ways for brands to be involved in consumers' lives that I think is only starting to become realized or recognized. Now, the flip side of that, which I also think was quite surprising, was I mentioned that I would go to all of these mixy mall locations. And when I would go to the malls, I would, you know, try to focus on looking at the different brand stores. So I would go by like the Salomon, the Nikes and everything, and kind of watch and see what their foot traffic would be. Sometimes I would have the chance to do it both, you know, during the day for a few hours and in the evening when foot traffic is typically a little bit higher. But the thing that really surprised me here was that these stores would largely sit empty. And it wasn't just the foreign brands. You know, the Anta stores and the Li Ning stores and even Kailas, they would all just be completely empty. And there would, you know, barely be anybody walking in there for hours at a time. And so we can see from the data, they're, you know, doing really well on e-commerce. They're growing in China, but they're not utilizing, they have all of this offline space. And, you know, even I read today an article about Salomon, you know, looking to expand to over 300 different locations in China. And it just kind of brought up this big question to me of like, what are you using this space for? And how are you using that space? And is that beneficial to you? And I think that brings me to one more big point about this trip is that and I want to be really careful about how I frame everything. There was no point where I was like, okay, this is, we're getting this all wrong, right? Or there's no like, these are my five key takeaways and insights. I think what the value of this was that all through all of these observations and all of these different touch points, I have a much better understanding of like, there's a lot of questions that brands need to be asking that they're not asking because they're just implementing the same playbooks, you know, from first tier cities into second tier cities and third tier cities. And there's a lot more context and there's a lot more questions that I think should be taken into account.
You talked a bit about the cities you went to, the path you kind of traveled. And that was something that I wanted to ask. We'll bring it back up and just say, if there's anything more that you may want to mention or could mention or a little bit more depth just on the route, the cities, the regions, why you chose them, what was your priority? I know that you kind of touched on a lot of that, but if we're good, we can move on. If there is more that you want to just add a little bit to that, please feel free.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, like I said, I was focusing on I tried to do ideally as many third and fourth tier cities, but there was kind of a mix of quite a few second tier cities in there as well. But because I wanted to focus on these, you know, lower areas of growth and also through all of these different provinces. So like in the south, I went through Guizhou, which is a really poor province. And then I went all the way up north into Inner Mongolia to a very small town of just several million, Ordos, which has the highest GDP per capita in China. So I wanted to get this like just crazy level of diversity in all these different places.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I think we've gathered quite a bit about the rhyme and reason of where you went. Were there some moments and stories from the trip, some interesting things that happened that particularly captured your attention, maybe like a local brand, an experience, or a conversation, all of which you touched on when you met those runners that were in their 50s that you said they used to travel, which is fantastic. But yeah, kind of mixing a brand experience conversation together, some things that stood out before we dive in a little bit deeper into the details.
Sure. I can share a conversation that I had, which I think brings up some very interesting point for luxury brands. So I had a conversation with an 18-year-old who was running a local coffee shop in the city of Xiangyang. And we got to talking because I started asking him, and this is touching on another kind of big theme, but all across China, I kept seeing young people dressed in cosplay costumes. And, you know, this has been a trend for a few years now. Obviously, it started more in Japan and has really taken off in China. And in Shanghai, there are really big events around cosplay and manga. So you'll see, you know, a lot of people dressing up to go to those. But what I was noticing more was that there are a lot of people just a lot of young kids dressed up in these costumes, just going to the mall or going out to eat with their friends. And this is like you're spending hours and hours on, you know, the makeup on your face and the super intricate costumes. So it's almost like that was part of their identity and just day to day. And they were hanging out in groups where some kids would be dressed like that and some kids would just be dressed in normal clothes, which I also find quite interesting. But I was asking this young guy, you know, what do you think? What is your impression of, you know, your peers who dress up like this? And he was really nonchalant about it and just said, I don't care. If it makes them happy to dress like that, they should dress like that. It doesn't affect me in any way. It's really not a big deal. And I think this is a really important consumer shift, because when we think about luxury brands, and especially luxury brands who, you know, entered China right when it started opening up, 30 years ago, and you had like the LVs, who it was, people were showing off, right? Like, you are owning an LV bag to say to other people, this is my status. And that LV bag is valuable to you because other people aspire to have one, or other people look to you to have one. So the value is kind of, your target audiences are quite an interesting mix. But now you have this younger generation who doesn't care as much what other people are wearing. They're not as impacted. That's not as important to them. And so as a luxury brand or product, how do you market, or how do you change your messaging or your product to make it more about what I provide to that individual for some intrinsic value, or how they experience the life around them, or how they can explore who they are through my product or my brand, and is less about, you know, projecting some image of status or you know, like mianzi, face. So I think that it was quite a big shift and quite an interesting conversation for me as well. And, you know, we touched on a lot of other interesting points. One other funny, unexpected thing that he had mentioned to me as well, you know, we talked a lot about what are your hobbies, what are you into, and definitely, you know, basketball was one of them. But he also, you know, came out of left field with the billiards. He said he and his friends play a lot of billiards, and he watches a lot of billiards content on TikTok. So I thought that was very unexpected, not something that I would have guessed right off the bat.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing a single pool table in eight years in China. I wonder. And what was the size of this city that happened to have a billiards room somewhere?
This was a third tier city in Hubei province, Xiangyang. Yeah.
Wow. Comparing larger cities to the smaller or emerging ones, you know, second tiers to fourth tier, something like that. What stood out to you most in terms of just consumer behavior, the trends or patterns that you saw maybe consistently, repeatedly across all the cities, both big and small, tier two to tier four, or what were noticeably the differences?
You know, something that stands out, and I'm sure people who have visited first tier cities will see it as well, but this whole idea around emotional consumption. So going to the different malls and walking down pedestrian streets, the stores that would typically have a lot of customers. Now, there would be a lot of people out in the mall, and there would be a lot of people out in these shopping streets. But again, as we talked about earlier, a lot of these storefronts would be pretty empty. But the ones that were attracting foot traffic would typically be milk tea brands, Pop Mart, or other kind of small toy brands, and then EV brands in the mall. Now, the Pop Mart and the milk teas, those to me are both kind of lumped under this idea of emotional consumption, right? Like, it's a small, relatively affordable treat that you can get. There's constant newness around it. There's always a new IP collaboration. There's always a new seasonal drink being released. And it just feels really kind of, you know, trendy and special. You can customize it, you know, with all the milk tea brands, you can customize sweetness level, flavor, you know, what you get in it. With Pop Mart, of course, you know, you're choosing, picking out the blind box is a very fun experience. So that permeated across, you know, all tiers of cities. So even lower tier cities, emotional consumption is still quite popular and quite a thing that's, I think, driving a lot of the consumption that is going on.
When you mentioned before your conversation with the young man, the 18-year-old, I was struck by what he said about not really caring about the luxury brands. Do you have any sense or semblance of a thought around, could luxury be taking a bit of a hit right now? Is there still an opportunity? Is this a one-off, or is this just a small minority of the market that is moving in that direction? Or potentially are we just seeing a bit of a normalization of the curve? Because when I was there, even 15 years ago, the early days, it was very much about, you know, luxury. There wasn't a lot of middle class products and services. There was the very high and the very low. But now, yeah, I'm curious on your thought, just speaking to some of the brands that listen, what are we thinking about where we're going with luxury?
So 2 points on that. One, there have been a lot of stories recently about luxury brands pulling out of a lot of these second tier cities, right? But they're just not having the performance that they are there anymore. So they definitely are taking a hit in certain categories. Now, that's not to say that all luxury brands are doing poorly. I think, again, it comes down to this idea of like, there's so much backstory and nuance to who is doing well in China right now. And there's no longer like a blanket statement. Before, you know, in 2018, 2019, when we had all those projections coming out about how Chinese consumers were going to drive global luxury growth, you know, by 2025, even by 2035, that they were going to be, you know, this certain percentage of an entire luxury spending. That has all tapered down a bit. But at that time, I think we were able to safely say, like, luxury in China is doing really well. Now it's more like specific brands are doing well. So it's not across the entire category. I think the brands that are able to tap into this idea of how do we serve a consumer who's more interested in an idea of having a better lifestyle, having a healthier lifestyle, having things that, you know, getting outdoors more, like it's a different concept of luxury than I think it was before. And the other big point I want to make that you touched on was like, previously when you would go, you know, and I remember this from 10 years ago, previously when you would go to lower tier cities and you would see the malls, there would be the super high end luxury stores, or you would have like a really like, you know, just low end, like all local kind of like cheap fast fashion stuff going on. Now there's more of that middle kind of premium space where you don't have, you know, the Pradas or the LVs there, but you'll have like Borsedong or you'll have Salomon or Hakka. So these more niche luxury brands. And the interesting, I think, kind of question that I have around that is now you know, go to a mall like a Mixi, which is kind of sitting in that upper middle level of the premium space. When you go into these malls, you're not necessarily seeing a ton of foreign luxury brands. You're seeing a lot of Chinese brands. You're seeing a lot of really high quality, you know, high end Chinese brands, as well as, you know, still foreign brands in there. But that's, you know, these younger consumers are now going to grow up with a very different landscape than the generation before them of what they're accessing when they go to these offline, more premium retail locations.
It gets me thinking how the airlines, how far, you know, they've come to where you had first class and economy. Mm-hmm. That was it, right? But now, you know, you have a business class and then you have like premium economy and, you know, all these kinds of other things. So it seems like that the market in China is starting to mature. I think you know, definitely focus on health and wellness and fitness activity, things like that. I know that there's starting to be a bit of a surge around the age-old CSR, where environmental and community involvement and things like this. I also think that it's a challenge to the international luxury players to say, you cannot just come in and just show ultra wealthy, ultra, like shooting all your ads of gorgeous people on yachts and these kinds of things. You have to now identify, you have to have a story. You have to be bringing it to represent more of the identity that they're choosing, not that they're falsely representing. It's not going to work anymore. You have to get a little bit more involved and work on your positioning harder than you potentially were before, when it was just like, show them rich, show them rich, show them rich.
Yeah. And I think that is really tricky territory for brands, because that is much harder to navigate and much riskier. And no one wants to take the fall, right? Because in order to shift away from kind of this top level narrative of like this aspirational narrative, and more to figure out, okay, how do we connect with consumers in these different cities, or how do we show that we really understand, you know, localized trends or needs or things that are going on? That's a lot riskier for brands, and a lot harder to kind of take those decisions and make those changes. And, you know, the landscape as a whole is becoming so much more competitive from foreign brands, from local brands. And so you do have to start taking those risks. Otherwise, it's just going to be more of the same. Like, I look around in Shanghai and there are so many pop-ups all the time happening. You know, they'll partner with like a cafe, or there'll be a pop-up on Anfulu or down at, you know, the M Gate area by the Bund. And most of the time, it's really just more of the same. Like, it's a big display and they'll have beautiful photos. But, you know, that's not doing anything particularly new and innovative. And that's, you know, showing up in a first tier city is not necessarily showing that you understand China. Now, that can go very wrong, as we've seen recently with, you know, the Arc'teryx brand, who maybe they tried to take a little bit of a risk and do that whole campaign with the fireworks on the mountain. So I fully understand why brands are very cautious about, you know, going beyond these first tier cities. It can get very risky. But I think we're in an era of like, you need to be doing a lot more than to understand consumers outside of these first, you know, tier cities, so that you can be having campaigns that actually resonate with a wider audience.
Yeah. And when you're talking about, like, first of all, if people aren't aware of the Arc'teryx episode of what kind of happened, they did take a bit of a brand hit for a kind of marketing stunt that they pulled that did not go over well. So you can go look that up if you want. You know, and then, you know, speaking to the challenge that brands have and not wanting to take the fall of being very risky, let's not forget that it's not an AI entity that is making decisions. These are human beings with very high level jobs that have to sign off on these things. And that can be they can be wrestling vigorously, emotionally about making those decisions. At the end of the day, their job could also be on the line with regards to how they're going to approach doing something in China. So 100%. Not too many in high-level corporate are that much of a swashbuckling entrepreneur type risk taker when it comes to these things. So 100%. Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned traveling through quite a bit of malls. So I want to go there and talk about offline retail. Are you seeing a resurgence of in-person shopping and experience-driven retail? Did you see an experience?
There were certainly a lot of people out shopping, and more than I would expect in a lot of these lower tier cities. So for example, I was in Ganzhou, which is in the south, which is a third tier city. And they had very low GDP growth. And actually in Ganzhou and Shantou as well, relatively low GDP growth, low GDP per capita, tons of people out in the evening at these mixed-sea malls. Like they were, you know, packed with people. Again, only a few stores were actually full where people were buying things. So they were buying, you know, the milk tea, they were going into Pop Mart making purchases, or they were super interested in the EVs that were there. They're in mixed-sea malls, just to give you kind of a lay of the land. Normally when you enter one of these malls, on the first level, there will be anywhere from like 8 to 14 different EV brands on the first level alone. They're like, you know, the stores and they're in the middle of the hallways and people are checking them out. Now, I do think a huge part of that is there's government subsidies right now being offered. So people are incentivized to purchase EV vehicles right now. There's a lot of price wars going on. So it makes it very appealing for consumers to buy those products. So that's kind of why they were having a lot of that hype. But again, I think more of the consumption is happening around these like small treats that you're able to reasonably purchase and that are going to kind of give you that little boost of feeling better. Again, it comes back to that bigger question I stated earlier of like, there's so many stores in these malls that are just sitting empty the whole time. And I don't have access to all of that data, right? Potentially it's worth it for them if they get a few customers in or it's like a billboard, right? But when you look at their spaces in Shanghai, for example, they're using retail space in a much better way. They're using it in a way where you can go in and have an experience with the brand and not necessarily looking at a row of shoes, because now you're able to do that on Douyin or Tmall. You're able to kind of have that shopping experience where you can see all of the colors, you can see somebody trying it on, you can ask all of your questions and get all of that information online nowadays. And that's where a lot of the purchases are happening. But offline, I think there's a big wasted opportunity for brands to create these better connections or build these better experiences with the space.
Okay, agreed. Okay. Now, what key lessons, insights would you have for international brands and what should they take away from your observations?
I think we're not paying attention enough to lower tier cities and consumers from those cities. There are so many activations, as I mentioned, that happen in first tier cities, or there's so much attention and so much focus. Whereas, you know, there are really cool shopping centers, there are really cool locations in second and third tier cities where, you know, if you do some activation out there, it can really show your understanding of local consumers and really show your commitment to China. So I think going this level deeper is going to, I think, kind of be the next wave of creating really great campaigns in China and connecting with consumers.
Do you think, and did you notice Chinese brands connecting with those consumers far differently than the international ones are? Are there lessons we can be learning from what the local brands are doing?
The only one that really stands out super well is Pop Mart. There are, you know, really cool up and coming Chinese brands like Kailas. I know you've had Clem on before. But when I went to these malls and these locations, even stores like Kailas, you know, they don't have a lot of offline visitors yet into their stores. And even legacy Chinese brands like Li-Nin and Anta, they weren't getting a lot of offline visitors either. So I hesitate to really say like Chinese brands are doing it so much better offline. They're really not. I think the only brand that has really nailed this offline and online experience is Pop Mart.
If you had to summarize your biggest takeaways from the 60-day journey in a few sentences, what would they be?
In a few sentences. Wow.
So, I know. It's hard.
It is quite a hard one. I think we've touched on a lot of these key points. There is a health and fitness revolution, might be kind of too strong of a word, but let's say health and fitness evolution. Yeah. That's going on, that is much deeper than what we expect, and I think than what the evolution looked like in other markets. I think there is a lot of interesting takeaways and ways that we can look at the development of the coffee and tea and kind of F&B market in China and how that is driving consumer interactions. And I think there's a lot of questions and more to dive into around how you use retail space and how you build connections with customers when the majority of purchases are now happening online and you're still using retail space like you were 10 years ago, but the whole landscape has completely changed. That like everybody has now adapted to doing things differently online and understanding, okay, we need to develop, you know, all these different social media channels and we need to use live streaming and KOLs, but the offline space has largely stayed the same and that hasn't evolved. So I think there's a lot of missed opportunities to be using that space better and creating a different way to connect with customers.
Yeah, I've always wondered why not offer discounts in store, in retail, flip the script. Mm. This is the price online. Head down to our store at the mall and it's 10% cheaper.
Yeah.
But there, now you have the opportunity. You have the in-person. You can give them the experience. You can flex your technical knowledge, right? And you can really build a relationship because you're in person, which gives you more brand loyalty.
Yeah, it gives you the opportunity to like to surprise and delight, which I think brands, like we've become so obsessed with optimizing the customer journey through all this data that we have and through all these online channels that many brands forgot about, like, oh, we should do something unexpected, or we should, you know, create this little experience, or maybe a little, not friction in the sense of a bad way, but friction in the sense of that something is unexpected for the customer. So that kind of, you know, triggers this unique experience and then they're able to connect with the brand more. And I think it's out there. Brands are doing it. Like I'll give you an example of Salomon in Shanghai. They have a beautiful offline retail location on Anfulu, one of the really popular shopping streets. And if you go in there, you go up to the fourth floor of this really beautiful house and each room is a different theme. You know, it's a very like, it's almost like an exhibition in each room. You go up to the fourth floor. I feel like I'm giving away a very well-earned secret here, but you go up to the fourth floor and there's a sign on the wall that has Salomon and you press the A and the N for Anfu Lu and a secret door opens up and you get to go upstairs into this secret passageway and have access to a secret room up there. Now, that is an incredibly unique experience. That, you know, makes you really connect with that brand, that makes you remember that brand, that makes you think that they're doing something innovative and fun. And that is going to translate down into the products and the different experiences that they have. It's something so far beyond like having a weekly run club or, you know, holding a special event. It's this really interesting, unique experience that you can have. So I would love to see more of that in these lower tier cities where, you know, I think consumers, they are purchasing the products, like they are going out and running and camping and hiking and they're purchasing online, but the offline spaces that are available just don't necessarily, I think, match the evolution of what has happened online.
And it gives them something that to talk about that they're going to repeat. And I think that's the other opportunity, is you get to tell the story, you get to talk about the technical aspect, you get to educate them and inform them, potentially wow them and dazzle them. Mm-hmm. Now, once they've made the purchase, they almost are looking forward to, I hope somebody really asks me about my shoes. I really hope somebody asks me about my hiking poles. I can't wait to tell them all the different things and how cool they are, because now I know, I'm informed, versus potentially just seeing something on a website and buying it and not really having that information on hand. I'm just going, yeah, I got them new. They had a good rating on, you know, Taobao or something, and just kind of moving on. But you've given them an experience that they're going to talk about, and they're going to spread the word, which means they're going to spread the brand. I mean, anybody that goes into that, you know, secret area in the Salomon store is definitely going to be talking about it and telling everybody about it. And that is just a huge win. I mean, I'm in the windows and doors industry over here in Canada. And even though shopping is free, and being in trades and construction and renovation, there's a free quote industry. When you call, you can have somebody come out and you get to get your quote from multiple companies and you get it for free. And it still works out. But I've also invested in building a quite incredible showroom of all the different types of windows and doors that are out there. And even though the quote is free, you have to come to my showroom to get that quote so that we can build a relationship with you, so that we can show you exactly what's in the quote. We can explain all the technical aspects of the quote that would go right over your head, like what is solar heat gain coefficient when it comes to a window? You'd have no idea what that meant because it's an acronym on a piece of paper, but we can show you. We can put the heat lamps up to the different types of glass. We can do all of this. So not only are you getting something, you're getting an amazing experience. You're very informed. You're going to talk about it, and you're going to buy with security, and you're going to have trust. And now we get to have a relationship with you, and hopefully you continue to spread our relationship to others in your circles. Yeah. So,
and think about like, all the brands who are really struggling in China because of all of the e-commerce shopping festivals. And that has eroded loyalty so much, because if you can just wait until there's always a shopping festival coming up. So if you can just wait until the next one, you get a discount on this brand or this brand, and like you can try different things out. So loyalty is really hard to come by because it's so easy to switch online when you don't have that relationship built up with the brand. Whereas if you're building these offline experiences and connections, which are just so much stronger, you're able to kind of break through the mold on that problem that is just really, really stumping a lot of brands right now with the e-commerce landscape in China.
I mean, you can talk about your company all day long. If you can figure out how to get other people talking about your company for free organically, now you're onto something. Mm-hmm. Okay. One more question. Two more questions, but this first one, you mentioned Clementine Pippa Ebel from Kailas.
Yes.
Who's going to win in a race? Okay. Now you're going to do 100 meter and then you're going to do a 10K. Who's winning?
I think right now I would say definitely Clem. I've got some injuries that I sustained over the trip, so not my best. I would bet on her for sure.
I would bet on her against me, or even 30 year ago me. She just has that, like, you could tell she just rips. There's no question.
Yeah.
Episode 256. Those who want to go back,
it's a great I love that episode. She has so much great insight on the, you know, trail running development in China and Kailas as a Chinese brand going global. So definitely listen to that.
You think Nike is big, go check out Kailas. Okay, so now on to our last question, and it's on a personal note. Of all the cities you went to, which city would you most recommend visiting, whether it was for business, culture, or just for fun?
Okay, I'll give you a few because we'll throw in some variety in there.
Okay, I appreciate that. I didn't want to make it hard.
Yeah, I think if you really enjoy and want to get out into nature and just experience something really unique, in Yunnan province in the south, there is a lake called Lugu Lake, and you can get there if you fly into or get into Dali. It's about a 5-hour car ride from Dali to Lugu Lake, and it is absolutely stunning. It's so pristine. You have a hard time believing you are in China and not somewhere, you know, in the Alps or something. It's absolutely gorgeous and just such a unique and beautiful place. There's a lot of ethnic minority groups up there, the Mosul people, which is a maternal society. So the women are the heads of the households. They run the businesses. So it's just a really interesting place to go and visit. The second place I would recommend, which is a little bit more of like a city, a small city, but easy to get to, especially from Beijing, is Datong in Shanxi province. And they have done a beautiful job kind of renovating their the old city area. And they have just beautiful walkways along the riverfront. It's really, really charming city to visit. And then the third one, which I think is it's very different in many ways. It's called Ordos up in Inner Mongolia. And this was known years ago as the ghost city because China had basically just built this kind of futuristic looking city in the middle of Inner Mongolia. It's more populated now. I wouldn't say that it's a ghost city now, but it's just a very interesting place. It feels kind of like you step into this other realm. The architecture is very unique, just huge wide streets. They're doing a lot of testing for self-driving vehicles up there, self-driving cars as well as self-driving trucks. There's a lot around energy up there. So, and it has the highest GDP per capita of any city in China. So it's a really interesting, off the beaten path kind of place.
Like a GDP growth rate? I'm guessing not GDP overall.
No, their GDP per capita.
Per capita.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Per capita. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Where can people go? I mean, I know because I follow you, but so I was getting the updates, but where can other people who are inspired to maybe go read back? Because you were kind of blogging a little bit here and there along the way and whatnot. So where can people go to see your journey and read back on everything you did and where you went and whatnot?
Yeah, the best place, we have a Substack where I released several blogs throughout the journey. There's also, you can go on YouTube, and I did a vlog every single day. They're usually between 2 to 6 minutes of that city and of the journey that day. So you can, you know, binge watch a whole YouTube series if you're really into it. And we'll be releasing a report towards the end of the month around these different categories that I was tracking. And like I said, of these questions that brands should be asking themselves about, you know, these new emerging trends and kind of where to look. So subscribe to the Substack for news about when that comes out.
Why Social? Where yes. Do the people find Why Social?
Yes.
Whysocial.com?
Exactly. You can go to whysocial.com. It's WAI for Y and then social. Check out some of our case studies, or you can follow me on LinkedIn as well. Always posting about, the trip and other interesting consumer trends and activations around China.
So it's Olivia Plotnick on LinkedIn, whysocial.com, WAISocial.com. And thanks very much for being such a good friend of the show. I really appreciate it. I respect the fact that you come here. I'm very honored that we've been one of the first ones to be able to interview you after the big trip. You're always good to us. I appreciate that very much. Olivia Plotnick, founder of Why Social, and one of the most insightful voices on Chinese consumer culture and digital marketing around China. And honestly, just one of the nicest people I know.
Well, thanks, Todd. It's always a pleasure to come on here. I love your questions. And let's do it again. Number five. Do I have to go on another journey? I guess we'll find out.
You don't have to go on another journey, but I think I was relatively light on you today. I didn't get too deep. But if you're doing a number five, you know, and there's that that Grammy trophy on the line, I'm going to be bringing it. So you better get some sleep before that one. All right. Thanks very much for coming on the show. And thank you to all of you for listening. If you want to get in touch with us, of course, podcast at WPIC.co. We're always willing to hear from you. Guest recommendations or just advice and such. Please give us a follow, give us a subscribe, give us a thumbs up, wherever it is. It really does help us out. But, you know, I hope you enjoyed the show today. So for me, from Olivia, and from everybody at the negotiation team, thank you very much for listening and or watching. And we will see you next time.
Growing a company is hard. Doing it in a foreign market, exponentially so. The best piece of advice I can give you is not to do it alone. When you start looking at the Asia-Pacific region for further expansion possibilities, and I sincerely hope you do, make sure you choose the right partners to do it with. My good friends at WPIC Marketing and Technologies have almost 20 years of experience helping brands, just like yours, enter China, Japan, and Southeast Asia. I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Negotiation, and if you're interested in being a guest or want to connect with me or any of our team, please reach out to us at podcast@wpic.co, and be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.